welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier, and coming up in this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, but right now, it's suspense. Comedian Red Skelton's one and only appearance on the CBS series from November 3rd, 1949, the story, The Search for Isabel.
Suspense. Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Mr. Red Skelton in The Search for Isabel, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
You know, Isabel first came into my life when I received a card from the telephone company stating that my application for a phone had been approved, and they were going to install one in my apartment. Well, I left instructions with the apartment house management to let the serviceman in. When I got home from work that evening, there was the telephone, as big as life, sitting there on the night table. Well, I just looked at it for a minute, like I'd never seen the phone before. Gosh, it started to ring. I about jumped out of my skin. I just let it ring a couple of times. Just wanted to hear it. To me, it sounded like the bells of St. Mary. Hello?
Is Isabel LaRue in, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. You must have the wrong number.
Is this Evergreen 31924?
Take a look. Yes, Evergreen 31924.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't Miss LaRue there?
No, this phone was just installed. This must be her old number.
Oh, I'm sorry to have troubled you. Thank you.
Oh, no trouble at all. I wouldn't have thought much about the call, except by next Saturday, I'd had a dozen more just like it. And most of them were men. But it interested me. Any gal that gets around like that must interest a guy. So I decided that the next time I would try to find out a little further. Hello?
Harold Mason's office calling for Miss LaRue.
Oh, yes. Put him on.
Just one moment.
Hello, Miss Isabel LaRue. Mr. Mason calling.
Well, Miss LaRue will be right here. Put Mr. Mason on.
Hello, Isabel. Harold.
Well, this isn't Isabel.
Who is this?
Well, you see, this is Dick Brown. Isabel LaRue used to have this number. You know, I would appreciate it very much if you could tell me any other way I could get a hold of her. You see, I get quite a few calls and... Hello? Hello, Mr. Mason? Hello? He hung up. Why, I don't know. But one thing I found out was that little Isabel, if nothing else, must know the right people. A guy like Mason who has got to go through two secretaries to make a phone call must have a couple of chips. She was beautiful, no doubt about that. She must have to be, to get so many calls from so many different guys, and the right kind, too. She was very mysterious. Or why else would they hang up when I asked about her? She was tall, willowy, very sophisticated, a blonde. No, a brunette, and a lot of fun. I drew a mental picture of her as a gag, just to see how close I'd come when I actually met her. Well, I finally dozed off. She must be beautiful and lovely. Beautiful, tall, maybe a redhead.
Just a little further. That's a boy.
You're...
Who else?
Isabel.
Of course.
Oh, you are lovely. So beautiful. Just as I pictured.
Thanks, Dick. You're pretty swell yourself.
Oh, what am I?
Come here.
Oh? Well, you wouldn't.
Afraid?
Of course not. It's just...
What?
Well, what are you doing with me? I'm just a common bank clerk. What about Mr. Mason?
Harold, he bores me terribly.
Oh?
Look, every man is at my fingertips.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
If I wanted them, I'd be with them. Instead, I'm with you. You only want something you haven't got. Once you have it or know you can get it, you love with your heart, not your mind.
Oh, I do love you.
Put your arms around me.
Oh.
Kiss me.
The alarm clock broke it up just when it was getting good. Well, the next day was Sunday. It may sound kind of silly, but I just couldn't get her or that dream off of my mind all day. Instead of ordering donuts for breakfast, I ordered two Isabels, plain. It got on my nerves. Well, the public library was open, so I wandered down, and I thumbed through the present and all the past issues of Who's Who, the phone books, film magazines, newspapers, and, well, it was nothing. Not a word about Isabel LaRue. Then that night, about 11 o'clock, hello?
Let me speak to Isabel, will you?
Look, she doesn't live here. The phone...
Don't hand me that, pal. This is John Worthington, and I have to speak to LaRue, understand?
I'm sorry. I can't help you.
Then just give Isabel this message, will you?
Listen, I can't...
Just tell Isabel I don't want to see her friend. I want to see her. And if she don't call me by tomorrow morning and tell me she'll give me another chance, that'll be all. Get it?
Okay.
And it'll mean plenty of trouble, too. I'll come down there to the Beverly Towers and really put on an act that she won't forget.
Yeah.
Got the name? John Worthington.
Yeah, I got it. Well, I didn't give it much thought then. That particular phone call to Isabel, that is. But the next morning at breakfast, something happened. I was drinking my coffee, and I caught the sight of the paper next to me. It was all over the front page. Playboy, gambler. John Worthington leaps to his death from the top of the Beverly Towers. Now, the papers had it doped out that the reason for the suicide was that John Boy was a couple hundred thousand in debt. But I, and only I, knew different. It was Isabel LaRue. Yes, sir, this millionaire playboy and gambler, John Worthington, had jumped to his death from the top of the Beverly Towers. I knew it was on account of LaRue. And the worst part of it was that two or three times during the day, I caught myself not blaming him. I dreamed about it all the time now. It was getting so bad that I was actually fond of going to sleep so I could meet her again. And suddenly one night, just as I was dropping off, I thought of something. The Beverly Towers. A clue. I would ask her.
Dick. Dick. I love you.
I love you. Isabel, are you at the Beverly Towers?
Where else?
Thanks, honey. The Beverly Towers is about as swanky as you can get. Strictly for the white tie and ermine trade. But Isabel was different. I knew that. So different. I arrived at the Beverly Towers and I walked up to the elevator as big as life. Boy, I had never seen a joint like this. The elevators were even gilded.
Your floor, sir?
Well, I'm from the FBI. A T-man. What apartment is Miss Isabel LaRue's?
LaRue? I shouldn't tell you, but, For how much?
Money? The United States government don't tip, my boy.
Yeah. It's 903. But look, I think you better get your information across the street, huh? The Blue Bottle Bar and Grill. Talk to the bartender. Because if you don't, I'll be in trouble.
Thanks, son. We won't forget you when we crack this case. Because your government has plenty of influence in Washington. It was actually around the corner on 3rd Street. The Blue Bottle Bar and Grill. Well, I cased it. The joint. Through the window. Looked pretty rough. And, well, anyway, I realized it was midnight already and they were starting to close up, and I was pretty tired, so I figured that tomorrow would tell the tale. A half hour later, I was back in my apartment. I got undressed and I climbed into bed. I was tired. Oh, I was so tired. Hello.
Hello, is Mr. Brown in, please?
This is Brown speaking.
This is the Mount Vernon Police Department.
Police?
Oh, now, don't worry. We noticed that you have the telephone number Evergreen 31924.
Yes, I do.
Well, we're trying to locate an Isabel LaRue.
Isabel?
And we thought you might be getting some calls for her.
Oh, you did. Floribel McCoy, you said?
No, Isabel LaRue.
No, never heard of her.
Well, we're sorry to have bothered you. But look, if you do get any calls for her, try to get their names and let us know, will you?
Sure will.
All right, thank you.
I put the receiver back on the hook. I must be going really nuts. Why did I do that for? So she's in trouble. What business is it of mine? Why didn't I tell him? Well, about after an hour, I finally went off to sleep.
Darling, come here.
Isabel, look, why don't you let me alone?
I don't want to, darling. Do you love me?
Well, what difference does that make?
A great deal. Tell me.
No.
I love you.
Well, you couldn't.
But I do.
All right, I'll tell you. I love you.
I need you, darling.
No, I need you.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah, but what kind?
Terrible trouble. Come help me.
I will.
Promise?
I promise.
Then come quick. Help me. Help me, dear.
Oh, Isabella, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Isabel. I forgot to ask you. What apartment are you in? 903?
Where else?
It was 7:30, and by 8:15 that morning, I was standing in front of 903. I was shaking like a leaf. I could feel my lower lip start to quiver. It always does that when I get nervous. I knocked softly. Twice. I waited. There was no answer. I was holding one of my new calling cards in my left hand, and I could feel it getting wet.
Oh? What do you want?
Well, I'm Mr. Brown calling for Miss LaRue.
Never heard of her.
Well, she lives here.
I live here, smart boy. Now go away.
You live here?
Who else? Now beat it, smart boy.
Well, now look, I know she's in... Hey!
Next time, don't pound the door off.
He was a big guy in a brown pinstripe suit. I got a look at the room inside. There was another tough guy in there. He'd been holding a revolver. Well, I tried to find that elevator boy to check whether I heard him right when he said room 903 was Isabel's. But he wasn't around. So I did what else he said. I went around to the Blue Bottle Bar and Grill.
Yeah, will it be?
What do you got?
Oh, about a little 8-year-old scotch.
Good.
Huh? Chaser?
Yeah. A root beer.
Huh. Well, you're serious about this drinking stuff. What's the matter, you gay, leave you?
Well, it's worse than that. You see, I can't find her. Hey, you don't know Isabel LaRue.
Isabel? Hey, just who are you, huh?
Here's my card.
Light's kind of bad. Richard Brown, Municipal Bank and Trust Corporation. Are you a good friend of Isabel's?
We had only just discussed getting married, that's all.
Oh, I see.
Well?
Well, I don't know where she is myself, but I think this gentleman does, Mr. Brown.
Oh?
Hello.
Hi.
Mr. Brown here is looking for Isabel LaRue. Says he and she was going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him you might be able to help him, Roy.
Oh, sure. I know where she is right now.
Oh? Where?
What are you drinking, pal?
Oh, 8-year-old pre-war.
Ah, you don't want to drink that. Hey, Max, that 13-and-a-half-year-old special, huh?
Right.
Jeez.
That's a... You know, I was about to recommend it. And, here you are.
No, not for me, Max. I'm a brandy drinker myself, Mr. Brown. Well, you must be the fella Isabel's been talking about. Come on, drink up.
Well, I
probably not the guy she's been talking about, but
hmm?
She's in trouble, and I want to help her.
Oh. Of course you do.
Where is she?
Well, the address is a little involved. Look, why don't we step in here, huh? Finish our drinks here.
Oh, sure thing.
You have a car?
Oh, of course.
Where?
Well, it's right out there. It's that gray convertible.
Oh, well, fine then. You won't have any trouble.
Thanks.
Hey, come on, drink up.
Thanks. Well, how long have you known the delightful Isabel? Miss LaRue, that is, Mr.
Just call me Roy.
Oh, thanks, Roy.
Ah, forget it. Come on, a toast. A toast to Isabel. The one and only Isabel LaRue.
To Isabel, wherever she may be. Well... How long have you known the delightful Isabel, Miss LaRue, that is?
Oh, but...
Oh, Isabel! Oh, Isabel.
Well, Nick, I knew for sure I was back at my apartment with enough bandages around my head to pass for a Hindu swami, which is maybe what I should have done. I was lying on the bed, and my left hand was clutched one of my own cards. And on the back of it was scrawled, "It's a misdemeanor and so forth to say you are a member of the FBI unless such is true. Lay off trying to contact I. LaRue. Signed, sincerely, your FBI." Oh, my head was throbbing like a trip hammer. I reached over and took a couple of aspirins, and in a few minutes I was off again in the land of Nod.
Dick, I'm here. Isabel. Dick.
Here. Look. Please, don't come near me.
Why didn't you help me?
I tried, honest.
Don't you love me?
Oh.
Don't you?
You know I do.
Tell me again.
I love you.
I love you, Dick.
I can't go on like this. We can't.
I'm with you now. I'll always be with you.
But you'll leave again.
Never again.
Come close to me.
There.
Oh, Isabel.
You smell of liquor.
Oh, well, I just had
a... My big, foolish, brave boy. They give you a Mickey.
They did?
What else?
Oh, I love you.
Promise you'll always be mine.
Forever.
Dear.
What, dear?
Where are you going to go when you get up and have a nice, hot dinner?
Blue Bottle Bar and Grill?
Where else?
As I walked in, I detected a hush fall over the patrons. The bartender hadn't seen me yet. But when he did, his face turned the same color as the dish towel he was wearing over one shoulder. Hey, give me the same as you gave me before, only this time, not so strong.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah, Brown's the name. You want to see a card?
I remember. That was a scotch, wasn't it?
Yeah, you got a good memory. But not that 13-and-a-half-year-old stuff this time.
Oh, sure. Hurt your head, sir?
No, I always wear bandages. It holds my hair down. Pour above the bar, if you don't mind, so I can see it.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, that's better. Now, where is Isabel LaRue?
Oh, really? I didn't have nothing to do with it.
Come on. Out with it. Where is she?
Please. She's in 903 Beverly Towers.
903, just as I suspected.
Oh, Mr. Brown, don't tell nobody. I told you that they'll kill me.
Oh, no, they won't. Thanks for the scotch.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, what kind of a gun can I get for $17.50?
Gun, 17. Oh, yes, I have a practically brand new shotgun, 12 gauges.
No, I was looking for a pistol.
Pistol.
Yes.
Here. Here's a honey, a 38 revolver.
Well, don't look so good to me.
Well, what can you expect for $17.50? It shoots, and I was told very accurately.
It's a deal.
Ah, Fine, fine. You will have to sign some forms here and some identification, you know, state law.
And then, there I was, standing in front of room 903 in the Beverly Towers. If Isabel was in there, I was going to get her out. And this time I knew she was in there. I reached in my pocket, and I pulled out the gun. I pulled the hammer back. I held it close to my body so if anyone might be walking down the hall, they wouldn't see it. I started to pound on the door again.
Well, that isn't Smart Boy. I thought I told you not to pound.
Let me in.
Smart Boy's got a gun. Get hurt.
Let me in!
What else? My hospitality's boundless. Come in and have a cocktail.
Yeah. 13 half-year-old scotch cocktail, I suppose. Oh, where's Isabel?
Oh, come now.
Where is she? I know she's here.
Put the rod away before you get hurt, Smart Boy.
Hey, this morning
Oh, hello, Roy. Come on in. Close that door behind you. Now, you two put your hands up.
What is this?
Now, both of you get over back against that wall.
Look, Brown, I don't know what you're trying to prove. If you're as smart as you think you are, you'll get out of here fast.
Isabel. Isabel, come out. It's okay. Stand back where you are. Stay there.
You got hurt once, Nosey.
Keep quiet. Isabel!
What are you waving the gun around for?
Now stand back.
You nervous?
You let Isabel go.
Hey, you're shaking so bad you couldn't hit the wallpaper.
Now, you stay away from that mantle.
I just want to pick up this automatic, that's all.
Now stay away!
You're too nervous. You're out of your league,
Look,
smart boy.
Put that gun down.
Drop the rod. Drop it.
Don't!
That's it. Drop the gun.
Well, the cops were there before the last bullet had left my gun. They slapped handcuffs on me and both of them. Apparently, the only thing I'd shot was the gun out of Desimone's hands, a feat for which I'm still being complimented for. Well, the lieutenant looked across the desk at me with real respect. Gosh.
Yes, sir. I gotta hand it to you, my boy. Takes nerve to walk in on a guy like Desimone.
Who's Desimone?
What do you mean? Tony Desimone, the guy who tried to murder you.
Yeah, but so what? What does he do?
You didn't know. The biggest racketeer and bookmaker alive. Oh. Yeah, it takes nerve.
Does?
We were waiting to catch him on something big, and you fixed it for us. Now we got him on attempted murder. Hey, how much do you owe you?
Nothing.
Oh, you're lucky. He owed about 200 grand in bets he'd taken off the other suckers. Guys like that poor Worthington guy and Mason?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, looks like Isabel LaRue is finally out of business.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh, why not?
Please, who's Isabel LaRue?
You don't know?
No, tell me.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. Who is she?
You don't know how it works, huh? Well, look, all bookies use fronts.
Fronts? You mean Isabel is a front for Tony Desimone?
No. Isabel LaRue is Tony Desimone. There is no such person as Isabel LaRue.
No. Oh, no. That isn't so.
What? Now, will you tell me why you went to all of this trouble?
Well, you see, there was a girl, and, she's... you wouldn't understand. Tony Desimone is up in prison now. Now, wouldn't this be true if Tony Desimone was the same as Isabel LaRue? She wouldn't be coming to see me anymore now, would she? Well, you'll have to excuse me now because it's a little late and... Well, I got to turn in and besides, we want to be alone. I'm sure you'll understand.
Dick.
Oh, dear Isabel. Oh, a new dress.
Mm-hmm. Like it?
Well, it's a little... Well, I love it, you understand, but isn't it a little daring?
No.
Gosh. I wouldn't want to see you wear it around anyone else.
I won't, darling. I love you.
And I love you.
You're so handsome, strong, brave, wonderful.
What else?
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Red Skelton, with Kathy Lewis.
Well done, Red Skelton, well done.
Well, thank you, Harlow.
I've heard you as a comedian, now as a dramatic actor. But look, have you ever done any commercial work?
Why, didn't you see me sell four little brushes?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah, do you want me to sell some of your Autolite Stay Full batteries now?
Red, they practically sell themselves. Especially after we tell people that Autolite Stay Full batteries need water only three times a year in normal car use.
What else?
Well, that's right, Ed. It figures that way because Autolite Stay Full batteries are star performers, just like the 400 other products made by Autolite for cars, trucks, planes, and boats in 28 Autolite plants coast to coast. Autolite also makes complete electrical systems for many makes of America's finest cars. Batteries, spark plugs, generators, starting motors, coils, distributors. All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team. So, friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Insist on and get Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next Thursday for Suspense, Van Heflin will be our star. The play is called Murder of Aunt Delia. And it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's Suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Rene Garrigank and Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from November 3rd, 1949. Comedian Red Skelton's only appearance on the show, and he was reportedly terrified before the broadcast, and not because of the story, most likely because of the 15.6 million people tuned in on a Thursday night at 9 o'clock. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. This episode first aired on April 30th, 1945 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. The story, The Unfortunate Tobacconist.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us about another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes.
It began on a summer evening in 1906. I'd been for a long walk in the park. I remember when I returned to Baker Street and entered our rooms, Holmes looked up at me with a twinkle and spoke.
You look positively glowing with health, Watson.
Well, I had a splendid walk, my dear fellow. You should have come with me. The park was looking particularly beautiful.
Well, old chap, during our absence, I've decided to write another monograph.
Oh, well, what's the subject this time?
Occupational liability to murder. For instance, the mortality rate is naturally high among policemen and detectives. Physicians are murdered with fair regularity, but the murder of a dentist is rare. And who ever heard of a murdered veterinary surgeon?
That's quite true, but what's the occasion for this little homily?
I've been browsing over my newspaper clippings.
Yeah?
You recall ever hearing of a murdered tobacconist, Watson?
No, I can't say that I do.
Oh, why? And yet my clippings inform me that no less than three tobacconists have been murdered in the past 6 months, and all the murders have occurred in the same small shop at the East End of London. Now, why do you suppose three tobacconists would be murdered in the same shop? Come now, old fellow. Give me a logical solution to the problem, will you?
Well, let me see. You say that the shop's in the East End?
Yes.
Is it near the river?
As it happens, it's on the water's edge.
Then supposing the tobacconist's shop was the headquarters of a smuggling ring. Perhaps boxes of cigars were unloaded from the dock and brought to the shop. Cigars containing pearls or opium or something.
Watson, my dear fellow, you're doing splendidly. Oh, you must walk in the park more frequently. You're positively scintillating.
Oh, no, you're making fun of me.
I assure you I'm not.
You're expecting anyone home?
No, probably a visitor from Mrs. Hudson. Go on with your fascinating theory. Now, why are three tobacconists murdered?
Well, because they know too much. Perhaps they demand a share in the profits, so the head of the ring decides to kill them.
Plausible enough, Watson. I really must congratulate you. Oh, I can see that I'm very lucky in having a biographer with such a lively imagination.
Thanks very much.
Come in.
Imagination. Oh, hello, Stroud.
Stroud, I'm glad to see you.
Hope I'm not intruding.
Not at all, my dear fellow. Come along, sit down.
Thank you, Miss Holmes.
Anything remarkable on hand?
No, Miss Holmes. Nothing very particular.
Then tell me all about it, Lestrade.
Can't hide anything from you, can I, sir? Yes, there is something on my mind and no mistake.
And it concerns the three murdered tobacconists, I see. Splendid.
Now, how the blazes did you know that?
Yes, Holmes, that's pure magic.
Not at all, Matty Watson. It's simple deduction.
Deduction?
Observe the five cigars peering out of Lestrade's breast pocket. They are of a far superior quality to his usual brand. Obviously, the scene of his latest investigation has proffered certain, well, shall we say, professional perquisites. Am I right, Lestrade?
Of course you are. Careful one, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you, I'll stick to my pipe.
Well, how about you, Doctor?
Oh, thank you, Lestrade. I do. Coronas.
And now, Inspector, tell me about the murdered tobacconists.
Well, how much do you know about the case, sir?
Just what I've read in the papers.
Well, curiously enough, we were discussing the affair as you walked in, Lestrade.
It's a strange business, gentlemen. I only got hold of the old story today when I had a long talk to young Jack Longworth. He's the owner of the shop.
Oh, in relation to Gerald Longworth, the taller member of Parliament who battled so successfully against the slum clearance bill?
His son, Mr. Holmes.
What's that?
Nice young fellow, too. When his father died, he inherited this shop along with a lot of other property in the East End.
Well, how big a shop is it, Lestrade?
Oh, just a hole in the wall, Doctor. Like all the other shops in that part of London. Young Mr. Longworth tells me he first rents it to a man by the name of George Grillett. He lives there with his daughter, Lily, and made it quite a nice go out of the shop. 6 months ago, when Jack Longworth was abroad, George Grillett has a stroke and nearly kicks the bucket.
Kicks the what?
He nearly dies, Doctor.
Oh, kicks the bucket. That's very good. I remember that.
And then what happened to Lestrade?
Well, while he's in the hospital, his daughter gives up the lease on the shop. A few days later, an Italian takes it over, and a couple of weeks later, he's found with his throat cut.
Did you investigate that first murder yourself?
No, Mr. Holmes. It seemed like any of a dozen killings we get in that part of London. A shopkeeper cut up, his till emptied, no clues.
Well, who was the next tenant?
A Scotchman. A bloke by the name of McIntosh. A few weeks after he moved in, the same thing happened to him. That time, I did go down there, but I couldn't find out nothing.
Was robbery again the apparent motive?
Yes, sir. But the killing wasn't the same. He was strangled with a silk scarf.
Silk scarf, eh? And who was the third tenant? The man who was murdered yesterday?
A Hindu fella. A man by the name of Mukherjee. He takes it over a week last Friday, and yesterday we finds him knife through the back and his money gone. Of course, I was down there before you could say Crystal Palace. But once again, I didn't find out nothing. No knife, no fingerprints on the till, no footprints. Just a very dead Hindu.
Was young Mr. Longworth a landlord in England when these murders occurred?
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it, Mr. Holmes. He docked at Tilbury yesterday morning. He didn't know nothing about what had been going on.
Well, I imagine he'll have difficulty in renting the shop after three murders.
Well, that's just it, Doctor. That's why he comes to me at the yard. George Grillett, his first tenant of the shop, moved back there today with his daughter, Lily. And young Mr. Longworth worried about them. Well, if you ask me, he's more worried about the daughter than he is about old man Grillett.
So the original tenants of the shop are back in residence again, eh? And what do you want me to do?
Well, I thought perhaps you'd be interested enough to come along with me and look at the shop, Mr. Holmes.
I should be very glad to, my dear fellow. Get your coat and hat, Watson.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, that wretched instrument.
I'll answer it. Hello? Mycroft, how are you? Yes, he's here now. Why, of course. I'll do everything I can, certainly. Let's have dinner together soon, shall we? Splendid idea. All right, goodbye.
Well, is that your brother, Holmes?
Yes. Lestrade, I do think you might have told me the whole truth.
Well, how do you mean, sir?
I thought your visit was prompted by a need for friendly assistance. I didn't realize that you came here virtually on a government order.
Well, it wasn't just quite like that, Mr. Holmes.
What's the government got to do with the case, and how does your brother Mycroft fit into the picture?
Not sure yet. But of one thing we may be certain, there's obviously a great deal more in this case than Lestrade would have us believe.
Why do you say that, Holmes?
You must bear in mind, old fellow, that occasionally Mycroft is the British government.
Nice part of London to take a walk in on a foggy night, ain't it, gentlemen? All our policemen work down here in pairs, you know.
Yes, I don't blame them. It's a vile neighborhood.
There's the shop just ahead of us, with a sign hanging out. Hello, hello. There he is again.
Oh.
See that bearded Hindu skulking off around the corner there?
Oh, yeah.
He's been haunting the place ever since I came down here.
So a bearded Hindu haunts the place, eh?
Yes, and yesterday, Holmes, the Hindu proprietor of the shop was murdered.
Exactly.
Well, here we are. I'll go in first.
Depressing looking place, huh?
That's Lily, George Grillet's daughter. Helps him with the shop.
Sorry to keep you wet. Oh, it's you, Inspector Lestrade.
Yes, Miss Lily. I brought some gentlemen to see your father. This is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Pleased to meet you, I'm sure.
How do you do, Miss Grillet?
How do you do, young lady?
Is your dad home?
No, Inspector. He won't be in till after dinner. Went down at the docks, he did, to see about some cigar shipments. Mr. Longworth's here, if you want to see him. We were just having some tea in the back room.
Yes, I'd like these gentlemen to meet him.
Jack, come out in the shop, Jack.
What is it, Lily? Oh, Inspector Lestrade. And this must be Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, I'm sure.
How do you do, sir?
How are you, Mr. Longworth?
I'm very glad the inspector was able to persuade you to come down here, Mr. Holmes. I'm dreadfully worried about this business, particularly since Lily's father insisted on coming back here. I'm afraid they're in great danger, but I can't make Mr. Grillet see it.
Young lady, I wonder if I might ask you a few questions.
Well, of course, Mr. Holmes.
Before your father had his stroke, did he receive any threats concerning his occupancy of the shop?
Well, if he did, he never told me about him. But it wouldn't surprise me. I often told him his biggest enemy is himself, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I think I do, Miss Grillet. When your father had his illness, who decided to give up the lease on the shop?
I did. No money was coming in, and, well, it looked like Dad might be an invalid for life.
Mm.
Of course, I couldn't run the shop by myself. Anyhow, I never did like this part of London. It wasn't the right business for Father.
What was his reaction when you told him to have given up the lease?
Oh, he was awful angry with me. Said I'd no right to do it without asking him.
By the way, we saw that bearded Hindu again as we walked up just now.
He's been hanging around ever since we came back here, Inspector.
Well, has he actually come into the shop, Miss Grillet?
No, but he keeps walking by and looking in the window. I'm sure if we both went into the back room or left the shop for a little while, well, he'd come right in.
Then I suggest we give him the opportunity he's seeking. Miss Grillet, I wonder if you and Mr. Longworth would mind leaving the shop for a while.
Of course not, Mr. Holmes.
Make your departure rather ostentatious, shall we say, so that he can't help noticing it. Give us half an hour or so and then come back. Perhaps you wouldn't mind going with him, Lestrade.
But Mr. Holmes, this is my case.
I know, but in a situation like this, Watson and I work much better alone. We may have to go a little outside the law, and your presence might embarrass us.
You'd never think I was a detective, too, would you?
Anyway,
we'll be
Mr.
back
Holmes.
In half an hour.
Poor old Lestrade. He gets very touchy as the years roll by.
See, I blame him. I'm leaving him completely in the dark. Come on, Watson. Behind the counter.
No,
my dear fellow. Not under it. Not under it, old chap. We lift the flap. Now I suggest we crouch down behind here. Come on, that's it. Have you got your revolver, Watson?
Yes, it's in my pocket.
Good. In the meantime, make yourself as comfortable as these cramped quarters will permit. We may have quite a wait ahead of us.
Look. Look, Holmes. There's the Hindu now, peering through the window.
Revolver handy?
Yes, sir. Here he comes.
All right, Watson.
Put your hands up. I got you covered with this revolver. Now, my man, what are you doing here?
Who are you?
Never mind who I am. Just answer my question.
I do not speak. Very good English.
Tum Hindustani bat bolne sakta?
Ah, sakta hai.
Iko tum ida aya?
Dekhne ko asti ya, tumara bhai humko hukam diya.
Tumara bhai? Tum jaane sakta?
Bahut acha. Salaam.
No, you don't, my man. Just you stay where you are.
It's all right, Watson. Let him go. He's on our side.
I wish you'd tell me what in thunder's going on. Who that man was and why you let him go.
He's an investigator from the Foreign Office, old chap. Given his instructions by my brother, Mycroft.
Mycroft?
Yes, old fellow. When my brother fails to tell me all the facts concerning this case, I begin to think these triple murders have far greater ramifications than we ever dreamed of.
puzzling case is occupying the attentions of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Three murders have taken place in a small tobacconist shop in the East End of London. As we rejoin our story, it's late at night, and Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, accompanied by Inspector Lestrade, are once again walking toward the ill-fated shop.
Well, I don't see that you've accomplished much, Mr. Holmes, except that you've just bought me a nice dinner.
Oh, we're making progress, Lestrade. If only by the elimination of obvious suspects. But there's a pattern to this case, and that should give us a clue.
Well, how do you mean, Holmes?
My dear fellow, consider the obvious motive of these murders, and particularly observe the results they've obtained.
Well, the motive was the same in all three killings. Robbery.
Oh, no, Lestrade. Don't let the theft of a few pounds from the till blind you to the real motive.
Look, 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 look. Here's Miss Grillet now. She's coming out of the shop.
Good evening, Miss Grillet.
Hello, Mr. Holmes.
Is your father home yet?
Yes, he is, Mr. Holmes. Well, I can't tell you how anxious I am for you to talk to him. I'm going to meet Mr. Longworth. He's taken me to the music hall. I should be home just after 10. I hope you'll be able to stay with Dad until then.
Well, don't you worry, Miss Grillet. We'll keep an eye on him.
Oh, thanks ever so much. Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Miss Grillet?
Please don't go into our rooms in the back, will you? I've left things in a frightful mess.
I quite understand, Miss Grillet.
Well, ta-ta all. See you later.
Let's go into the shop.
Who is it? Oh, it's you, Inspector.
Here, yeah, these gentlemen, Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Oh, good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. Good evening.
Did you meet young Lily just now?
Yes, she told us she was going out to the music hall with Mr. Longworth.
Yes. I'm afraid we had quite a set to about that. A very strong-willed girl, Lily, very strong-willed.
Am I to assume that you disapprove of your daughter's association with Mr. Longworth?
Yes, of course I do. He's a toff. He's got lots of money. Lily's so blind she can't see that he's up to no good. I'm pretty sure he's afraid I might find out what's really at the back of these here murders.
And what is your theory, sir?
Well, I'll tell you this in confidence. Got nothing to back it up now, you understand. There's been talk of widening the docks around here. That'd make property values go up, you see, of course. Well, young Longworth's been trying to buy up all the other shops along the waterfront here, but they wouldn't sell. If you ask me, he's had these murders done just to frighten people away so that he could buy cheap. Now, I'm not saying that he did the murders himself, you understand, but he planned them. Why, in these parts, it's easy enough any night to get a throat cut for a couple of quid.
Yeah.
That's why I'm glad you're here, gents. You see, I just got another warning.
Warning? What do you mean, sir? Warning?
Found this note slipped under that door there not three quarters of an hour ago.
Let me see it, please.
Huh. What does it say, Holmes?
I shall call on you at 8:30 tonight. You know what's good for you. You'll be waiting for me alone. Try any funny tricks, you'll go where I sent the rest of them.
Well, that's obviously from the killer.
Possibly. What's the time now?
Look, it's 8:20.
I was hoping you gentlemen would wait in our rooms back of the shop. You can hear what's going on in here, and if he tries any rough stuff, you can pop in and nab him.
Just what I was about to suggest myself, Mr. Grillet. Either way, will you?
Oh, yes. Just step behind the counter, gents. Through here. Here we are. Ain't exactly Buckingham Palace back here, but you can make yourselves comfortable, can't you, gents?
Oh, don't you worry about us, Grillet.
Oh, I better turn out the gas. If this bloke spots a light under the door in here, he might smell a rat. Now, there we are. Now, as soon as I see him coming in the shop, I'll knock twice on the door, like this. And that'll give you the signal that he's here. Is that right?
Right, you are, Grillet.
All right, now keep your ears open, gents. I may need your help.
Where are you, Holmes? I can't see a thing.
Over here, Watson.
You know, I've got another theory why Jack Longworth might be at the back of all this. You listening, Holmes?
Yes, I'm listening, old fellow. What is your theory?
Longworth knows that Grillet doesn't approve of his having anything to do with Lily. So when he goes abroad, he leaves instructions to murder the tobacconist. The assassins don't know about Grillet having a stroke, of course, so they keep murdering the wrong fellow.
Well, that makes very good sense, Doctor. What do you say, Mr. Holmes?
Holmes, where are you? My son, he's disappeared.
No, I haven't. I was just exploring.
Shh. The signal.
tackles the front door. Somebody's come in. We'd better go in. We've got to get in there at once.
Open the door.
Well, it's locked.
Never mind that. Get your shoulders into it. Come on. Come on. Help me. On. Come on. One more.
Poor devil. He's been slashed with a knife. Willett. Willett.
What? The killer got away. I'm going
to... Now, Lestrade, conserve your energy. Your murderer lies there.
But that's Grilly.
Of course it is. Search his pockets, Watson. I think you'll find a bloodstained knife.
Let's have a look. Good Lord. He has a razor in his pocket. It's covered with blood. You mean to say that he slashed himself?
Let's slip the handcuffs on him, Lestrade, while he's still play-acting. He may be more difficult to handle when he realizes the game's up.
Take your hands off of
quickly,
me.
Come on, quick. Come on, yes.
Hey.
Come on.
Oh,
Very neat, Lestrade.
Yeah. Well, now that I've knocked a wounded man out cold, perhaps you'll tell me what's going on, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, I'm completely in the dark, too.
Oh, it's very simple, really. Willett has just staged a fake attack on himself. Fool us into believing that someone else is the murderer.
Yeah, but the threatening note he received...
Composed by himself for the occasion.
Yes, but we heard voices. We heard the shop door open.
We heard Grillet talking to himself. And as for the shop door, that's how he gave himself away.
Well, how do you mean, Mr. Holmes?
Whenever the shop door opens, there's a bell that jangles. You will notice, So.
Yeah, that's right, there is.
There's no bell jangle when we were in the back room. Grillet got us in there, locked the door on us unobtrusively, and staged his little drama.
Yes, but we heard the door creak open and close, Mr. Holmes.
The creak of this flap in the counter would sound exactly the same, my dear fellow. Now listen.
Yes, but why, Holmes? How did you spot that Grillet was a man?
It was obvious from the beginning that since nothing had changed about the shop except the ownership, that the attackers were directed against any tobacconist who was not Grillet himself. Of course, his daughter, Lily, obviously knew what was going on.
Well, I don't see how you figure that one out, Mr. Holmes.
Every remark that she made showed that although she loved her father, she knew his failings. In any case, she gave me the final clue.
Well, what clue was that?
In very pointedly asking me not to go into the back room of the shop. Of course, she meant the reverse of what she said. I followed her advice when you were explaining your theory to Lestrade.
Well, what did you find, Mr. Holmes?
Miss Grillet had obligingly left a secret door open, a door leading to a passageway that seemed to go down to the waterfront. We'll examine it more thoroughly in a minute.
Yes, but I still don't understand Grillet's motive, Holmes.
Neither do I, old chap. No, I suspect that from the interest of the Foreign Office in the case, this shop has been the headquarters of an espionage ring. I'm afraid the final answer to that question will have to be given by someone else.
Oh, who, Holmes?
By my elder brother, Mycroft. Humiliating, isn't it, Watson?
And what was the final answer to the question, Dr. Watson?
Well, Holmes was right as usual, Mr. Foreman. The shop had been the headquarters of a spy ring operated by Grillet. And many international criminals had been smuggled in England or foreign ships moored up the river.
And did Mr. Grillet hang for his crime?
No, he didn't, my boy. Before he came to trial, he had another stroke and he died.
Probably just as well for his daughter's sake.
Oh, his daughter. She's a lovely girl.
Did she marry Longworth?
Indeed she did. As a matter of fact, I danced at her wedding. It was a very wonderful wedding reception. See, you would have been there yourself, Mr. Foreman. In fact, you'd have liked it very much. They served a pretty good wine.
Was it a Petri wine by any chance?
Well, it was so good it easily might have been.
You mean because Petri wine is the kind of a wine you can't forget?
That's exactly what I do
mean.
Well,
that's because the Petri family really knows all there is to know about the fine art of turning luscious, sun-ripened grapes into fragrant, delicious wine. And now, Doctor, do you feel like giving us a hint about next week's story?
Yes, I do. Next week, Mr. Foreman, I'm going to tell you a strange adventure that happened to Holmes and me in the West End of London. It concerns the death of a famous actor who was portraying the part of an equally famous man, Sherlock Holmes.
Thank you, Doctor. See you next week. And say, from the news we've had so far today, maybe by next week at this time we'll hear some really good news from Europe.
I certainly hope so, Mr. Foreman. But let us remember the war won't be over when Germany quits. We've still got to lick Japan, and that's going to take a long time. So instead of celebrating when VE Day comes along, let's just strengthen our resolve to support the war more than ever here at home. Keep that war job. Don't leave it till you're released. Keep on buying more and more and more war bonds and keep them. Don't turn them in. Help all you can with all home front activities and observe all our wartime regulations, such as price ceilings. That's the real way to celebrate a victory in Europe, by working harder to end the war in the Pacific.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Six Napoleons. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Meanwhile, don't forget to take advantage of our offer of a free recipe calendar.
Oh, the Petri family took the time to bring you such good wine. So when you eat and when you cook, remember Petri wine.
To make good food taste better, remember...
Petri wine.
This is Bill Foreman saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday, inspired by the work of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. That episode first broadcast on Mutual Radio on April 30th, 1945. And that brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.